Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera with the Unscripted SEO Podcast. I'm here with Bradley Benner. Let's jump into it. Where have you been in SEO? Where did you start?
Well, thanks for having me on first, Jeremy. I appreciate that. And excuse me, I got started actually as an electrical contractor and learning how to do local SEO to generate leads for my own electrical contracting business. And that was back in 2009. And it was 2010 before I actually started, you know, becoming efficient or proficient, I should say, with SEO and local SEO. Way back then, it was Google Places.
Yes. You know,
but I learned how to build a website with WordPress. And like, I could barely turn on a computer when I started learning how to do SEO. No kidding. And the only reason why I started learning how to do it to begin with was because I had started my contracting business. I'd done electrical work for almost 20 years, and I had started my contracting company about 2 years previously, and I was just generating leads and getting work for, as a subcontractor for like remodeling companies and things like that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to start kind of generating my own work, and so I started talking to the other contracting companies and the other you know, trades, plumbers, HVAC guys and stuff like that, and asking them, so how are you guys generating leads? And the more successful companies that were growing and, you know, their employees were paid better and all that, they were telling me at that time in 2009 that they were getting leads from what they called search engine optimization. And I was like, well, what is that? You know? And so anyways, I didn't have enough money at the time really to hire an agency to do all that for me. So I decided to learn it on my own, and I just became absolutely fascinated with it. And, our ability to be able to manipulate something so power, such as Google search, was so fascinating to me that I just became hooked almost instantly with learning how to do local SEO. And so for the first probably almost a year, I really focused in on trying to learn how to rank a Google Places listing and a WordPress site. And I did it for my own contracting company, but then also some of the other trades that I worked with. I just started setting up some you know, test campaigns or test projects that I could then test different methods with. And I had a site that I ranked for carpet cleaners and art in Alexandria, Virginia. I was using Exact Match domains at the time.
And, right.
I did a locksmithrichmondva.net, I think was the other domain, or maybe it was .com. But anyways, so I ended up over about a year's time, I ended up ranking my own site and started generating leads. And then I ranked the carpet cleaning site and the locksmith site. And so I decided to, you know, I heard about somebody talk about Rank and Rent, right? Which was like a lead gen method. And so I started contacting carpet cleaners and locksmiths and trying to rent out the site. And so that started me kind of on a lead generation side of a business for not only my own company, but also did it for other contractors. Because once I monetized those first two additional sites and Google Places listings that I had created, I said, man, this is a whole nother side hustle, right?
Like, yeah.
I can generate leads for contractors. And so
and
I
not actually have to do the contracting.
That's right. And so it was interesting because I did the lead gen for my own business and continued doing electrical work. But then I started doing leads for a lot of other industries and tradespeople that I worked with. So I ended up doing stuff with HVC, and I got hooked up with a tree service contractor, so a tree care company.
Done one of those, yeah.
Yeah, and then over the years, from really about 2010 until 2012, I was just doing lead gen and my contracting company. But in 2012, because I live in Virginia, and so most all of the leads that I was generating was here in Virginia, and the winters are bad enough in Virginia that the construction work slows way down during the winter.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So I had two kind of years of or seasons of my income from my lead gen money kind of fell significantly during the winter. And so in 2012, I decided I wanted to open an agency to just offer like under traditional retainer based services to try to stabilize that income a bit.
Right.
And so I did that. I started an agency called Big Bamboo Marketing, which is just a local SEO agency. And so I ended up doing that for another year. For 2012 to 2013, I ran my lead gen business, my contracting company, and was doing kind of agency work on the side. So I moonlighted at night doing my lead gen and SEO business. And after about a year, I generated enough revenue that I was able to quit doing contracting work and electrical work and went full time in SEO. And so from that time, about a year later in 2014, I started Semantic Mastery with a handful of partners, and that is a coaching, an information product business and a coaching business where we teach others how to create a business around local SEO skills.
Yeah.
Local SEO agencies, consultants, et cetera. And that was in 2014. And then in 2019, after doing my agency work and running Semantic Mastery for, you know, however many years, as an agency, when I got started, although I mostly worked with like home service contractors, I would talk to anybody that sure. would look in my direction.
Yeah.
You know? And so I had clients across the board in all different kinds of industries. The majority of them were home service contractors. Finally, in 2019, I got smart because in my lead gen business, which I managed to keep the entire time, I had really built up a whole big portfolio of lead generation sites for tree contractors.
Uh-huh.
And so in 2019, I decided I got tired of every time I got a new client in a new industry, I'd have to go like reinvent the wheel and start from scratch all over again and learn a whole new industry and
yeah.
and what was compelling and effective and all this. And it just I got tired of that. It was so much front end work.
Yes.
And so I decided in 2019 to just niche down to working with just tree service contractors. And so I did, and I rebranded my agency. I just got a DBA, and it's called Tree Care HQ, is in Tree Care Headquarters. And so Tree Care HQ is now my, I built a directory site. So I use a niche specific directory called Tree Care HQ as a conversation starter to then initiate conversations with tree contractors in a non-confrontational way.
Right.
And then once I get their listing delivered to them for free, that's when I transition the conversation into, hey, what are you doing for marketing and blah, blah, blah. And that's when I go into my pitch. But so that was in 2019. In 2020, I started the directory site and started using that to kind of as a lead generation tool for my own agency to just find tree contractors. And ever since then, what's really crazy is because I niched down and I productized my business and yeah. I systematized it, because now it's like an assembly line. Like, we deliver the same deliverables now every time for every yeah. client. It's just the only thing that changes is the location. It's the same keywords, the same creatives, everything. And it really helped my agency to scale, like just really scale quickly. And then because of that, I kind of applied those same principles that I learned from really productizing my local SEO agency into launching two white label SEO agencies that I do fulfillment for other local marketing agencies. So I have a white label link building business called Semantic Links. And then I have a white label SEO business that does kind of Google Business SEO. We don't do like on-page self-hosted sites. We'll provide consultation and recommendations, but I don't get involved in other people's websites. That's just a policy I have. But we have a full service kind of white label SEO business called Semantic SEO. So, yeah. So I've had a long journey of about 15 like years now in the SEO yeah. business, but I've been just fascinated with it. The SEO business has been very good to me, and I always try to give back when I can.
All right. Wow. That's quite a journey. There's a lot to unpack there, but
sorry.
It's good, because like there are pieces of that I've had similar journeys on myself as an SEO of, you know, trying, you know, the rank and ret approach, being at an agency, you know, doing freelance. So when it comes to productizing, because I'm fascinated with kind of the business of SEO, and it's something that I can't talk to every SEO about it, because not some SEOs, they just live in-house. And you can talk to them about large-scale migrations and how awful it is to redirect a site, but they don't have the same pain point of trying to figure out the monetization model of deliverables. You know, you've run an agency. How large was your team, or what is the largest of size team that you have had? Is it now or previously?
Yes, now. Now, okay. And currently my Semantic Links business, which is my white label link building business for local SEO.
Yeah.
I've got 28 full-time employees in that agency.
That's a very large scale. I'd love to dig into, you know, I'm not asking you to give me all your secrets, but what your general approach is. But let's put a pin in that and come back to it. I want to talk about what led to the productization process. Like, was it just the overall not wanting to be a jack of all trades and just like hourly on like converting your brain into an hourly paid, you know, rental space? Is that because that's where I'm at? I'm productizing myself right now. And
yeah.
And I've got two beta products that I'm kind of working out. But so I'm curious, is that the same motivation of wanting to move away from having to capitalize on your own personal headspace and trying to create something that can be executed in a repeatable fashion?
Well, for me, it was because of scalability. You know, I hit the ceiling of what I could do on my own. And, you know, I was doing custom SEO work for every company because, again, I had multiple industries that I was working on. And so every time I would land, a new client in a new industry, you know, I'd have to give them a custom proposal. And because, you know, I know people say, well, SEO is SEO. But, yeah, and that's true. You can, once you learn the tactics of SEO, that is correct. It's just SEO. But in order to be effective in any particular industry, and remember, most SEOs call themselves internet marketers, but just because you know SEO doesn't mean you know anything about marketing.
That is
true. You know, like, and so you can be a really good technical SEO and suck at marketing, and you're going to have a really hard time monetizing that skill. And so for me, like, you know, I've always been fascinated with SEO. I like to do a lot of testing. We teach how to do SEO. I kind of develop my own products and my own flavors of SEO and my own tactics and such. And I've been doing that for many years, about 10 years now since we've started Semantic Mastery. And, but really what it came down to was, you know, doing SEO, even once I niched down to just working with tree service contractors, I was still doing more individualized marketing plans for each company. Initially, when I first just niched down to working with tree service contractors, I certainly lightened my workload then because I was familiar with that industry.
Yeah,
and I'd already kind of developed a lot of SEO methods for the tree service industry that were effective. But like I said, I was still doing a lot of custom kind of proposals for each company.
Yeah,
and what I found was it, like, you know, not only do you end up spending sometimes hours developing a custom proposal just to present it to the client or the prospect, excuse me, and then they reject it, and so now you're out all those hours that, and it was like, okay, so why am I doing this? Number one, number two. The other thing was, you know, it was hard to create any consistency between campaigns if every different if all marketing campaigns, even for just tree service contractors, were different campaigns.
Right.
So for me, I wanted to have a way to scale without so that I could duplicate myself without it always being me. So I started learning, you know, in 2015 or 2016 is when I started developing SOPs, so standard operating procedures and things like that. So once I niched down to just working with tree service contractors, I was still struggling because I had very quickly hit a cap, a ceiling where I just couldn't take on any more clients under the model that I was operating under.
Yeah.
And so I had to figure out a way to kind of productize things and then also systematize them so that I could scale. Like, number one, I wanted to eliminate the need for doing custom proposals. So I developed, you know, a few packages and a few front-end services that I would lead with. And then I would always just point people to a particular package and say, look, these are your options. You can select from one of these, but I don't have to do proposals anymore. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Number two, all of the individual services that we provide that in some cases are bundled into packages, they've all now been standardized with standard operating procedures.
Yeah.
And so now I can delegate and duplicate myself by delegating that work to others. And then once I have a virtual assistant or a team member that has been trained up in that particular process, then they can become the team leader and then train subordinates with the same SOPs. But now I don't have to do that anymore. And so that's how I was able to then apply those kind of productizing and systematizing of my local SEO agency. And then once I was able to do that with TreeCare HQ, then that's why I knew how to do it. And so that's why I started building white label agencies. And I've built two of them since then. The one that just really exploded was my link building business because I'm selling links to other SEOs. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. You don't have it.
It's an easy sale.
Yeah. It's an much easier sale than trying to explain, okay, I want you to give me a couple $100 so that this text turns blue with an underline on this site that doesn't belong to you. And I swear that it is worth that much money. It's going eventually be worth a lot more money back to you.
Just trust me.
Trust me. Like, I'm going to turn this link blue. So blue, you've never seen such blue linked text before. I've had that conversation trying to train somebody versus, hey, I know you need links. Here's my process. I'm able to do it for this. And I get this type of anchor text on this type of site. Like, that's kind of the dream. Like, I've kind of productized a process to do community cleanups. And so if somebody wants to make a difference and be able to get like a press release links, some nice social links on Facebook, and get a placement on a subreddit for your community. Reddit's super hard. They won't let you in unless you are serving the community or don't seem like you're overly self-promotional. But it seems like, hey, if this company is doing a beach cleanup, like, they don't mind that the post says Sarasota beach cleanup by McDougald SEO or McDougald Asphalt or whatever the company is.
What is the intent of the promotion?
Exactly.
That's how they delineate between them.
Yeah. And then they're like, yeah, I want to volunteer. And so you drive RSVPs off of a form, and the links go from, you know, event aggregators, from city halls. So I get that. I like that that process of talking to other SEOs about link building is so much easier. So it makes sense that you'd be able to. Now, what I am curious about is, so as setting it up as a white label agency, so your intent is then you do that one productized thing for an agency, they've got their relationship with their client, and in their package they do A, B, and C. Your C, they get an order and say, okay, I've got this client, you do this once a month or twice a month or whatever, right?
Yeah, we have, so semantic links, we build links based purely on relevance. I don't really care about third-party metrics, so I don't care about DA, DR, none of that stuff. We look at relevance. We look at topical
dumpster
relevance
fire,
and
DR.
Geographic relevance. Yeah, and so like we everything that we sell, we do a lot of, before we ever make a recommendation, or like some people, we have one-off services and subscription-based services under semantic links. We promote our subscription-based services to agencies, and I do cold outreach to agencies to book appointments with agencies that have clients or consultants, so consultants and agencies. And then typically we're promoting our subscription-based services because it's fully managed, done for you, link building by my team and I, and it's a very data-driven process. Again, everything's done based upon all the links that we build are based upon relevance, and we do a competitive link analysis before we ever place the first link. And then every single month we refresh or regenerate those competitive link analysis reports for each client so that it informs our decision as to which types of links we're going to place, which anchor text we're going to use, which topical categories we need. All of that is done based upon real-time data. But I do have clients that can come. We have one-off services. So all of the kind of recipe or the mix of links that we produce in our subscription plans can all be purchased as one-off services too for the SEOs that don't want to be committed to a subscription or that want to more self-manage their own link building. They can still buy links with relevance from us, but they can do it on kind of a one-off basis at their own cadence and, you know, with whatever budget they have, et cetera. So, like I said, because of my Semantic Mastery coaching channel, my YouTube channel, we've been coaching now for almost 11 years. We've got over 4,000 videos on our YouTube channel. I've got almost 12,000 subscribers. And so I get a lot of SEO clients for link building and white label services just from my organic marketing from YouTube. And that's the only thing we do is our YouTube channel, like as far as marketing is like for and that's not a direct, I'm not overtly marketing for Semantic Links clients through Semantic Mastery, because Semantic Mastery I have partners in, but Semantic Links is my own link building agency. So, but I get a lot of leads from that. But then we also do cold email outreach, which, by the way, that is how I grow all of my agencies primarily, is through cold email. Believe it or not, cold email just crushes it still. Like my local SEO agency, Tricare HQ, Semantic Links, Semantic SEO, like all of them is what we get most of our clients through cold outreach. And so for Semantic Links, we've been targeting SEO agencies. I've got, for that company, I actually have an appointment setting company that manages it for Semantic Links. For my own local SEO agency, I manage the cold outreach email campaigns. We've been reaching out to agencies and through LinkedIn, just scraping Google Maps, things like that, and Clutch, you know, scraping contacts off clutch.co, which is a kind of an agency directory site, and just been really, really good. I started that Semantic Links in January of 2022, excuse me. So it's been 3 years this month that we've been in business. And like I said, I started with just me and one other assistant in that particular business, and now we got 28 full-time employees. And it's like shooting fish in a barrel, man. Selling links to SEOs, especially when they see my process, because my sales presentation, there are no hard sales tactics. I don't have to. Like, all I do is say, look, I ask them about their agency at the start of a call, and then I say, I'm going to show you what we do at Semantic Links. I'm going to go through a presentation. There's no hard, and I tell them right up front, there's no hard sales pitches here. I'm just going to show you what we do. And if it makes sense, you can, I'll show you where you can purchase. If not, hey, maybe you'll learn something.
Yeah.
And then
the,
we go through a presentation.
Pitch is off, the softest of pitches is often the hardest.
Yeah, and it works.
There is an aspect of, like, if you know and trust your process, and like, this works. If you don't think it doesn't work, then don't buy it.
That's right.
I get, but if you have to be in a pretty solid place process-wise to be confident in it, and also not overly hungry, which means that probably somebody that is a subject matter expert needs to be the one doing the pitching. Because if you hire a salesperson, they're always hungry. It's been my experience.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I have, over the last 2 years, I've tried hiring 4 different sales reps, and I've spent countless hours and tens of thousands of dollars on trying to place a sales agent into my organizations, my agencies. And I can't get anybody. I've failed 4 times, and I've spent tens of thousands of dollars and spent countless hours working with them, training them, et cetera. And so I do 100% of the sales for all of my agencies, 100%. But the way I look at it is nobody cares about the revenue of my companies as much as I do. You know what I mean? So at least right now, I'm still okay with doing the sales, except that it does eat into my time managing, you know, the teams and everything, because I'm always on sales calls. So
You're not the only, I can think of at least 3, maybe 4 agencies that I know of where the top level CEO at an SEO centric agency, you know, doesn't actually do almost any of the management or execution. Like they've built the systems, they kind of control the framework, but I think there's something, I don't know, maybe it's like an expertise thing. Maybe it's being able to talk convincingly about what you've built as an agency just kind of comes better from somebody, from the person that built it versus a sales, you know, salesperson who's kind of not as knowledgeable about it.
Yeah.
Or they're coming at it from a sales background and just doesn't work as well. I think it's... Sure. I think it's something about that honesty of experience that just...
Yeah, and I think it's also like, you know, as the subject matter expert, it's more consultative. And like I said, it's not, it's like we don't really have to pitch. Like when I do my sales calls with tree service contractors or tree companies, it's different, right? It's a lot different because now, but the way that I do that is, you know, it's easy to sell links to SEOs, especially when I show them my process, because it's a very data-driven process. And I'm 100% transparent about exactly how we do it all. And I show them that on the presentation, and most people are like, wow, then that's, I've never seen anybody so detailed. And so they end up buying. I have a really high closing rate for selling links to SEOs, but selling marketing services to tree care contractors, my conversion rate certainly a lot lower.
Yeah.
But I've still gotten pretty good at that too, because I, you know, warm that contact up a whole lot before I ever present them with an offer. And so we establish trust and everything else. And again, it comes back to, so kind of like what you're saying, when I'm selling marketing services to a tree guy, like if I were a former tree contractor, I could probably sell it a lot better because again, it's that subject matter expert. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know the tree. I mean, I know it cause I've been working in the tree industry doing SEO for 10 years, but I don't know it like they do, but I know how to talk to them though. So I know how to pitch my services to them after I've kind of warmed them up properly through the way that I do that. And again, I use the directory outreach as a process to establish communication without them thinking I'm going to sell them anything.
Yeah.
And that's why they're open to talk to me, because I don't know if you ever tried to do cold outreach to local businesses to sell local SEO services, but man, it's, you know, that they get solicited to so much that like they put up their defenses immediately if they smell a sales opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, and so with the tree guys, the way that I developed that kind of sales process is it, you know, I've got a very specific way that I do it to kind of warms them up, but, and we establish some trust and I also deliver some things of value to them before I ever transition the conversation into talking about their digital marketing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of reflective too of what I'm going to ask the forbidden question, which is what is your process next? But I just want to make a comment that what I found valuable in the link building equation is establishing value to the prospect where you want to get that link built.
That's correct.
You know, like it's essential to be able to think of it not as a one-off opportunity or like a one and done, but you're opening a door, like to get somebody to open a door, you have to show up on their door in not a hockey mask or in a suit with a vacuum. Like, but if you show up with a cake and say, hey, I wanted to share this cake with you. I'm your neighbor. Oh, hey, you've got cake for me. Okay, well, let's talk. I think there's something in the human psyche about connection and kind of looking at what does it take for somebody who owns a site to take that step and to editorially place a link somewhere? What does that process look like? Because it's an investment of time. They have to edit the site in some way, shape, or form, or tell someone to edit the site. So there's a convincing process. So what's your gambit? What's your process to get that door open that you based a whole white label link building agency around?
Well, my white label link building, I don't do the outreach links. So I actually build link sources based upon relevance. So we have a large PBN networks that are okay. separated by either topical relevance or geographic relevance. Because what I found is that links with topical relevance, which Google understands topical relevance now because it has a large language model fully integrated into the search algorithm, which it didn't have previous to 3 years ago. 3 years ago and previously, it didn't have that. But now, because it has its own large language model integrated, Google can understand and evaluate a link for relevance and very, very quickly determine how relevant it is at multiple levels. Like, in other words, like, for example, at a referring page level, most all links that you purchase from link providers, if they're decent at all, you're going to get page level relevance from the backlink. But a lot of the times, link sellers are selling links on sites with high DA, high DR, and high traffic statistics, which means it's likely that, especially for local SEO, which is all I do, with local SEO, if you're buying a link from a traditional link provider where, again, in order, they bill you based upon those metrics, DA, DR, and traffic. And so they're typically looking for those types of sites that they can publish a post on. Yeah. That yes, you're going to get page level relevance from that post. But what is the overall domain level topical themes at the domain level, like this site in its entirety?
Right. And it's so science fiction book. It's a content farm, and they're posting about pills on Tuesday, and then they're talking about rocket surgery the next day, and then an election campaign post, and the relevance is all over the map because the publishers,
domain-wide,
the publishers is publishing everything.
That's right. And so I'm not saying you can't get value from those links. You certainly can, but you can get more value from links if you have a link, so a post with a contextual link. So the referring page URL is going to be relevant, number one, but then you post that on a blog or a site that the overall topical theme of the site, the primary topical themes of the site also fall into one of those categories or related categories. Because here's the thing, the helpful content update, which is well over a year old now, like the helpful content update is a whole new way that Google analyzes. Remember, Google is still a document retrieval algorithm. It's a very advanced document retrieval algorithm, but it's still a document retrieval algorithm. And when Google kind of shifted away from a keyword-based algorithm to an entity-based algorithm, the way that I envision this is it went from a two-dimensional document retrieval system to a three-dimensional document retrieval algorithm. And so when I talk about, like, you know, the way that with the large language model, when Google comes to crawl a target URL, it first tries to identify what the topical categories are of that page. And you can determine this by going to Google Developer Console and playing with their natural language API. You can go in and paste a URL or a snippet of text from a page and then have it scan it. It'll tell you which topical categories were identified. So Google will first determines what the topical categories are of the target page. Then it crawls backwards to the referring page URLs, and it scans that content to the main content body of the page to determine what are the topical categories there. So when you have a contextual link placed within that content, if the topical categories match from the referring page to the target, that's a relevance match. So that's layer number one, and that's pretty typical for links. Yeah. But then when Google then can scan from the referring page URL, Google scans site-wide across the entire domain. And this, again, coming back to the helpful content update, it then determines the overall kind of topical themes of the site in its entirety. And it also comes up with the helpful content score or the site quality score, right, from the helpful content update, which that's what I was getting at, is Google is a document retrieval algorithm, and it used to be that you could have like one page or a handful of pages on a site that were optimized to near perfection, but the rest of the site could be garbage and optimized terribly. And as long as the domain didn't have a penalty applied, you could still rank those pages that were optimized very well, quite well. But now, again, is because of Google's large language model, and it, like I said, I think it went from a two-dimensional system to a three-dimensional system. Google maps out an entire site and determines what the overall site's quality score is, and now that becomes a multiplier to every page on the site. And so it's harder now to rank individual pages on a site if the rest of the site is poorly optimized, because the rest of the site influences each page's ability to rank.
Right.
And so going back to what I was saying about link building, when Google crawls a target URL, it identifies the topical categories of that page, then it crawls backwards to the target, or excuse me, referring page URLs, identifies what the topical categories are of that, then it crawls site-wide across each of those referring domains to determine what the overall topical categories are of the site in its entirety. And then if it's a relevance match at the referring page and referring domain, now you've just got more value. Google places more value upon that link. So then there's one more layer that we look at semantic links, which I just talked about. I don't care about third-party metrics, and I don't. But I use Majestic as my backlink analysis application because of their topical trust flow metric. And it's not the metric that matters. It's the topical categories or the topical classification of the backlink profile. So essentially, topical trust flow is – Google doesn't care about topical trust flow. I just want to be clear about that.
Right.
But Majestic has a metric, which is a classification of the topical relevance of external backlinks. It's called topical trust flow.
Yes.
And it is fair. It is pretty damn accurate, to believe it or not. And so
I do.
We look at the topical trust flow categories that are relevant to the natural language categories when we start to do link building for all of my white label link building clients and everything. Like I said, we do competitive link analysis, and the first thing that we do for local SEO is we geolocate the browser to simulate a search from the particular location that the local business is physically located in. Then we search for the search queries that are the most important to that particular business so that we get true localized search results.
Yeah.
Then we extract the top five ranked competitors for each of those queries.
Yeah.
And we analyze their backlink profiles, and we classify their backlink profiles into one of five anchor text types. We have brand/URL, miscellaneous or generic, empty/frame, target anchors, which are exact match anchors, keyword plus location modifier, and topic anchors, which are keyword only anchors. So we come up with an average number of links for the ranking pages for the particular search query, and an average anchor text ratio. Then we go take those five top ranked pages and submit them to Google's natural language API and get the topical categories according to Google identified on those top ranked pages. Then we list that in the competitive analysis sheet with all that data, and there's pie charts to show the anchor text ratios and everything else. And then from there we end up matching up the Majestic topical trust flow categories that align with those Google's natural language categories. So now when we build links, we achieve relevance matching as much as possible. Not all of the links that we place are going to be relevance matched at three levels.
Yeah.
But most of the links that we place, and we always try to hit all three levels of relevance matching with every link. But by the way, if every link you got was fully relevant at three levels, referring page, referring domain, and the backlink profile pointing to the referring domain, then that would look fishy too, because wouldn't look like a natural looking link profile.
Yeah.
So we do a mixed varied of relevance matching, but we try to build mostly links that are relevance matched at three levels. Again, referring page, referring domain, and the backlink profile pointing to the referring domain. And it's incredibly effective. And like I said, there's two things to be targeting for influencing organic ranking. Mostly that's topical relevance. So links with topical relevance, which do have a slight influence on how a Google business profile will perform in map search, but it's only a slight influence. But links with geographic relevance or location relevance, that has a significant influence on Google business profile performance in map search and a slight influence on organic search performance. But what is a link with geographic relevance? Well, if you can get a link from if a tree care contractor joins their local chamber of commerce and they get into the member directory and they get a link back from that member directory, Google knows that that link is coming from a local association, organization, institution, whatever, in the same general area.
Yeah.
So that link has geographic significance, and therefore that helps to influence maps ranking.
Yeah, you know? Forget about DA. It's about geography.
Relevance. Yeah, geography and relevance. Right. That's right, 100%. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, listen, because I know I have SEOs, and it's funny. I'm not saying this to I don't do this to call people out, like to embarrass them, but I'm genuinely curious because I sometimes on my sales presentations, when I say I don't care about third-party metrics, what I care about is relevance, and I show them exactly how relevant our links are. Sometimes they'll say, well, what is the average DA or DR of your links? And I tell them, like, I don't know because I don't even track that. But let me ask you a question. Why is that important to you? And I swear to God, I never get a clear answer out of that. People start to stutter and stammer as to why they think that's important. And I say, so why is DA important to you anyways? If I can show you that the links that we're providing are fully relevant at multiple levels, that is a much more effective link that's not spammy at all. Why does the DA or DR matter? And then after they kind of stutter and don't give me a good answer, that's when I tell them, hey, listen, if that's still important to you, then by all means, what I recommend that you do is analyze the potential link sources that are all going to be relevant and determine which ones have those higher third-party metrics that you care about. And then those would be the ones that you can select as your link sources, you know?
Usually they care about DA because they're the people
somebody
that
told
are,
them to.
Well, they sold it or they had to sell it to the client because the client was told, hey, DA is how you measure the value of a link. And so as in their middleman position, they're trying to get links, and the only links they can get or acquire have those DA requirements. I mean, there's a lot of times where I've offered, you know, other SEOs who are friends, hey, can I give you a link? And they're like, well, it's not a DA, you know, it's not above DA 30, so it's not any use to my client. I'm like, I mean, it's going to help them rank. Well, you know, they're buying, you know, these links and they're paying, they have these requirements for it. I'm like, okay, I get it. I mean, if you're like doing a huge SaaS and you have like, you're trying to charge a super high premium per link, you know, multiple hundreds of dollars, then you got to hang your hat on some number that can communicate, okay, cheap, expensive. So DA comes out as
a quantifier
that it isn't, because you can get I've seen like a DA 60 and it was the worst spammy content farm, like, you know, article about, you know, Viagra on one page and the next page was about woodworkers in Arkansas. Like, really?
And you can manipulate third party metrics, and that's
absolutely
the whole thing. You can inflate those. So,
right. So
that's why, like I said.
Yeah. So it's actually a game, a process of trying to think about, you know, what is it that Google is trying to look at and put into their algorithm? Why are they building these signals? And why are we just trying to fake them? Like, let's see what we can do to, you know, to provide that, to meet the criteria, you know, to get genuine links from genuine places that reflect authority and value.
Yeah. Well, so that's why, like I said, what we did is when I kind of discovered this about, you know, links with relevance, I tested a lot. And by the way, the only reason I started a white label link building agency is because in my own local SEO agency, I never built links. Like, I did all the on-page and everything in-house, but I always outsourced link building in my own agency. It was something I just never enjoyed doing, especially because I didn't like running this link building tools and stuff back when mass spam used to work really well and all that kind of stuff, like GSA and SE Nuke and all that kind of stuff, like from back in the day. But I didn't like running all them tools anyway. So I always outsourced link building work and I was buying outreach links and stuff like that. But what I found was around 2021, I started seeing that the links that I was buying were having a waning effect. They were not producing the kind of results that they used to. Mm-hmm. And so for my tree service contractor clients in my own local SEO agency, I just kept spending more on links out of their monthly retainer. I wasn't going to my tree contractors and saying, I need to increase your retainer because the links that I'm buying aren't producing the effect anymore. And I didn't do that. I just was eating the additional costs. And so my margins kept getting smaller for me to achieve the same results for my contractor clients. And I finally got to a point where I said, this is unsustainable. I'm not making much money on these campaigns right now in order to still produce the results that I'm used to. So I started, you know, I'm an SEO at heart. I've always enjoyed tinkering and experimenting and playing with SEO. And so I went on about a 6 or 8 month journey where I just started trying a whole bunch of different link providers as well as testing my own methods.
Yeah.
And I got introduced, I got Eric Lancheres. He was getting ready to launch the tool called OnPage AI. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But anyways, I was on his email list for like 8 years or whatever. And so I got introduced to that tool called OnPage AI, which integrates with Google's natural language API. And so OnPage AI, it's called OnPage AI. So it does a ton of on-page optimization stuff like content tuning and It does AI writing and all that. I don't use it for any on-page functions at all. None. I use it specifically for the link relevancy functions.
Yeah.
And that's, again, just because it integrates with Google's natural language API. So I can take page URLs and submit them and get the topical categories back from the page. I can submit domains and have Google scan the entire domains and tell me what the overall topical themes of the domains are.
Yeah.
I can also take the target URL and backlinks built to the target URL and plug them into OnPage and have that process that I just described where Google goes and scans the target URL, identifies the topical categories, then scans the referring page and referring domain, and it tells me how relevant are the links, how many relevance, what relevance matching have I achieved from these links or from the current backlink profile, how many are relevant and not relevant, etc. And so, again, with me, it was just kind of the whole backlink profile stuff from, OnPage and focusing in on building links that were relevant. When I've discovered that and I first heard it and I saw this tool and how Eric was talking about, you know, links with relevance and what Google was paying attention to, it instantly made sense to me. Remember, I got a company called Semantic Mastery. I know it's all about relevance and, you know, semantic web is about how entities associate with each other or relate to each other. And so yeah. I knew that relevance was the way, the direction in which Google was trying to go when it came to determining how valuable a link was.
Yeah.
And so when I heard that, it instantly clicked and I started testing immediately with that, just trying to build the links with most relevance and ignoring any third-party metrics such as DADR, et cetera. And sure enough, when I started testing with that, I started seeing significant results from my tree service clients. And this was in 2021.
Yeah.
So I'm in my coaching group in Semantic Mastery, it used to be on Facebook. Now it's in Circle. After I had tested with my own agency clients for about 3 or 4 months with these types of links, which are purely based on relevance, and it was working like crazy and significantly yeah. less expensive, my margins got real high again, and I was loving it. And so it was in December, might have been November of 2021, where I posted in my community, my group, coaching group, and I just said, hey guys, I found this link building method that I've been using for tree service contractors that is just crushing it. It's based purely on relevance. I would like to test on across a few other industries. Would anybody want to work with me at cost just so we can see if it's also valid? I figured it would be, but I wanted to determine it. And so I had four of my program members or coaching program members take me up on it. Interestingly enough, I had two chiropractors, one in Toronto and one in Panama Beach, Florida. And then I had a personal injury attorney. And then I had another tree service contractor in Australia. It was one of my coaching students who had a tree service contractor client in Australia.
Yeah.
And we ended up applying for about I think it was 6 or 8 weeks between November and January and applied this type of link building process to those campaigns. And they saw results too. And so in January 2022, I said, that's it. This has got to be something I open up to the larger market. And I'm glad I did because that became my quickest growing agency for sure. And it is my highest revenue earner. So
you classify, you say build these links, and I love the analysis. Actually, the looking at the who's actually ranking to look at their backlink profile. I do the same with my SEO Arcade tool, but for keywords, I look at the clusters that Google is actually assigning of co-occurring. So if there's a top-ranking page for tree cutting in Cookeville, and there's 10 pages, look at the whole cluster of what are all of the keyword phrases that all of those 10 pages rank for, and then sort them by overlap, and you'll actually identify in reverse how Google sees the semantic relevance of those terms and phrases and kind of like wean down, you know, because like 9 out of 10 all use that, all co-rank for this term versus down at the bottom of only 2 of them co-rank for this term. So you can kind of see a relationship between those mm-hmm. terms for keyword targeting purposes. So I hadn't thought through of looking at the backlink profile and kind of doing some similar processes to that. I certainly appreciate that. I do want to get into a little bit of the distinction of what you're saying in terms of building links in terms of outreach versus something else. What is that something else? If you
okay, perfect. Is it all right if I show the screen for a minute or two?
Yeah, grab the screen.
Okay, because what I'll do is I want to show. I'll just go ahead and show you an example so that it'll make more sense than just trying to narrate it. So give me 1 second while I pull this up. All right, this will work. Grab the screen.
I will have to narrate for the podcast only listeners. But it will go up on YouTube too. But
sure, I understand. All right, so I'm going to grab this window here, and this is an example of my competitive link analysis workbook. And so we do a separate sheet for each keyword, And then this will explain. So I'm just going to very quickly explain this process. And then that will show you in that explanation will answer the question is how we build our link sources.
Got it.
And how we identify what to do. So this is one of my tree service projects. And so it's a tree contractor in Louisville, Kentucky. And so we always, like I said, we geolocate the browser for where the GBP is physically located first. So that's in the project data sheet. Then we title the sheets after the search queries that were submitted when the campaign was submitted. So typically we start with the three most important search queries for that particular client. And then as the campaign progresses, we can also analyze additional keywords that the client wants to optimize for. But for example, Tree Service Louisville here, once we geolocated the browser to simulate a local search, we then search for that search query, and then we pull in the top five ranked competitor pages out of the organic section, not maps. And that's, by the way, we always, I used to, for the first 8 months, so from January 2022 until August of 2022, we were doing a combination of both top five ranked organic competitors and top five ranked maps competitors and their backlink profiles. We would average out all that data. But what always occurred, almost always occurred, was that the organic competitors always had topically relevant link profiles according to Majestic. So this is Majestic. Let me just give you an example. If we go back and take a look at the backlink profile for this Louisville Felling Pro, you can see that those are relevant categories to a tree service contractor.
Yeah.
And so if we look at the page or the domain level for the top ranked competitors, starting with the clients or the targets asset, and then the top five ranked competitor domains, remember, you got to look at two, and you know this, but two sets of metrics when you're analyzing backlink profiles. Now you have to look at page level metrics and overall domain level metrics.
Yeah.
And again, that comes back to a function of the helpful content update. It's important to understand overall domain level metrics, both backlink profile as well as the optimization of the site, et cetera, all that matters. But in any case, if we look at these top ranked competitors, we can see that four out of the top five have relevant link profiles in relevant topical categories to what was identified by Google, which by the way, these are the Google's natural language categories that were identified on these top ranked pages. And so what I was saying was when we then search for the search query, we pull in the top five ranked pages and out of the organic section, because those are always the ones that, or most of the time, it's, remember, there's always exceptions and anomalies in SEO. There's no absolutes in SEO. Right. But the vast majority of times when we analyze the top ranked competitors for local search queries, the top ranked competitors usually have relevant link profiles in topical categories that are relevant to that those industries. Okay.
Yeah.
And so we stopped analyzing the backlink profiles for maps competitor or the top ranked maps competitors when I finally realized what was occurring. And that is where I have this always showing in my, because this is my sales presentation that I have
local
open here. I'm not here to pitch anybody.
Relevance.
That's right. And that's so, and when I, after 8 months of after 8 months of analyzing the top ranked competitors for maps listings, I finally realized that what I was seeing, a kind of a pattern or a trend emerged, and that was that you could identify links from local sources pointing to the sites that were ranking at the top of map search. And so that's how we identified links with geographic relevance influence maps. But so specifically when it comes to topical relevance, we pull in the organic rank competitors here. We eliminate big directory sites to where it's, we're only looking at other local business sites that are ranking well for this particular search query.
Yeah.
Then we analyze the target page that should be ranking for that search query. And again, we classify each of the anchor text into one of five anchor text types, and this as it relates to local. We have the brand slash URL anchor text category, miscellaneous or generic. So click here, learn more of this post, that stuff. Empty slash frame anchors, an iframe, an embed, or redirect, or an image backlink without alt text. A target anchor is a keyword plus location modifier. A topic anchor is a keyword only. And so once we've analyzed the backlinks to the target, then it gives us the anchor text ratio for that page, and then we repeat the same process for each of these top five ranked competitors. We plug the data into here, and it tells us the number of links, the average number of links for the top five ranked pages for that search query, and it also tells us the average anchor text ratio so that we know how many links we can build to this page before we exceed, or before we meet and exceed that number, which we try not to do when possible. Sometimes we have to exceed that number, or sometimes it's already been exceeded when we take on the campaign. But in any case, we try to stay at or below that number when possible with just using more relevant links. So then the last step is we then go analyze those pages and this right here on page AI using the predictive link building. We just want to analyze the page URLs with Google's natural language API.
Yeah.
And it returns this data, which is that we list that right here to show you the topical categories that Google identified on these pages.
Yeah.
And then we match up Majestic's topical trust flow categories that align with Google's natural language categories there, which I have this web page that I created that is just a list. It's TTF is in topicaltrustflow.semanticlinks.io. This is just a list of topical trust flow categories according to Majestic. So we end up creating, we create this list of topical trust flow categories that match up with Google's natural language categories. And now we know exactly how many links we need to build, what the anchor text ratios should be, and which topical categories we should be getting links from, so that we can go out and start identifying link sources. And the way that we do that, just to be clear, is we go identify expired domains that meet these topical categories. And then once we have a list of expired domains that meet these topical categories, we analyze their backlink profile to determine and only purchase the ones that have relevant backlink profiles so that we can achieve three levels of relevance matching from our backlinks.
Okay. So it's kind of zombie link building, but you're getting a specialized specific zombie. You're bringing it back from the dead, and that's where you're giving the links to your target page.
Correct. And interestingly, something else I wanted to very quickly mention is, so, you know, doing this type of data analysis for all of my clients, we do this every month for every client for every search query. And we have an enormous amount of backlink profile information for the top-ranked competitors for local search queries. And because of that, what's really interesting is we've determined, if you take a look at all three of these search queries, what is the primary anchor text ratio for the top five ranked competitors or the anchor text type or category? It's brand/URL, and it's almost always the case. Like, again, 90 to 95% of all local search queries that we analyze show that the top-ranked competitors have primarily branded anchors in their backlink profile to the for the ranking page for that search query.
Yeah.
So that, number one, that validates to me that Google is rewarding strong brands, so building brand authority is critically important. Number two, it also influences how we build links. So this is just a link-building diagram of how we build links, and so at tier one, we stick with almost exclusively brand anchors. And so we typically build an anchor text link to the money site. We also have an ID page strategy, which we won't have time to get into today, but we build an anchor text link to that, which is what we call this the third entity component. And then we have the Google Business Profile Map embed, which is typically an embed. So at tier one, we are typically doing branded anchors with a Google Map embed. At tier two is where we do most of our keyword anchors so that we can push keyword relevance, target and topic keywords through a brand anchor. And it's a much safer way to do that. And so just to show you, if we look at the tier one links for this campaign, which this campaign has been in progress since June of 2024, we can see that at tier one, the anchor texts are almost exclusively brand anchors, or what I call a compound anchor, which is a brand plus a keyword or brand plus a location modifier. But if we look at tier two, the tier two links that we have built, you can see the anchor texts there are almost exclusively keyword anchors. And so the whole point is, like I said, we do this kind of a data analysis so that we can determine exactly what the campaign needs. And then we set out to build link sources that meet these relevance metrics. And here's an example. So just very quickly, if I show you the links that were built from June and July of 2024, this is just an identifier for which type of link it is. AI means that they're topical links, and we used AI to help us develop the content. LB stands for local blog, or a link with geographic relevance. But in any case, here's one of where I was talking about relevance matching. You can see that this is the target URL.
Yeah.
Here are the referring page URLs. And then Google went and analyzed this. And Google came back and showed that the relevance matching that we're achieving is what you're seeing here. And then we, like I said, we take it one step further in that if we actually take a look at the backlink profile that is pointing to this referring domain, you'll see that it is entirely relevant. And that's kind of the whole point. If we look at the overall root domain, look at the trust flow value, 32, and look at those topical categories. You think those are relevant to a tree service contractor? And so that's how we do it again. So we actually, and just so I can show you guys just very quickly, these are my inventory of sites. We have 503 topical blogs across various topical categories or industries. And then check this out. We've got over 1,650 blogs now and local blogs. So these are blogs with geographic relevance. So we've got 2,150-ish blogs so far currently, got over $250,000 invested into this network, but it's very, very effective.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely. I come from a much more hardcore outreach link building world. And
those work too.
But I also had a conversation with John Henshaw of Raven Tools, and I remember it very clearly. It was 10 years plus, but we were at a meetup, and he was talking about our strategy at Raven Tools as software, and he said, we're missing the mark. We're trying to get people out there to blog about these topics so that they can link to us. But there's so much information infrastructure that is missing that we certainly could provide. You know, as a company behind the scenes, we know how to create content. We know how to develop useful content for and make information-centric sites. There isn't any law or reason or process that's preventing you from standing up sites in your community, sites in your topical niche, setting up sites in that are topical authorities, and having this as a propulsion method in the back of how you monetize that just is a way to, you know, create content that isn't schlock. You know, like, there's a dumbing down of a lot of content, and a lot of people that are doing content marketing, you know, they continue to try to push the edge of scale. Like, I'm going to push it, you know, 1,000 AI, you know, blog posts based off of the same training data. I'm like, well, I mean, if the objective is just to push schlock at scale, like, you're going to eventually get models that are fed on schlock, and it's all going to go down the toilet.
Garbage in, garbage out.
But if you, as an SEO, as an agency, maybe even as a brand, start thinking about, well, you know, what if we start building some of these assets that we control elsewhere? I think that, you know, or come to Bradley Benner, who's already built quite a bit of a network and might help with a piece of that. But I like the thought process there of, like, what is the, you know, the information ecosystem out there, and how does that influence, and why not own a part of it? Like, why not think about building it as opposed to, I'm going to pour, because the margins keep slimming down as you have to spend more and get less out of the efforts. If you are always building links just out of outreach, then you're going to always, but at some point, if you start, you're starting to build inventory of, like, these things that you control. So that certainly
makes
sense.
Yeah, and by the way, just to kind of add to what you're saying, just so you know, outreach links are still important, because some of my sites get traffic and some of them don't. But what we're pushing is relevance. And so, just to be clear, I still do use outreach links for my tree service contractor clients. So once per quarter, so every 3 months, I will go in and I will buy one or two outreach links for my tree service contractors, where I'm still selecting proper relevance.
Yeah.
But then what I'm looking for, my primary metric there is traffic metrics. And that's what I'm buying from those outreach links, is really traffic, still from at least relevant referring page.
Yeah.
But what I'm looking for is domain level traffic metrics. And the reason I do that is because, and it, depending on each quarter, depending on what the retainer is that my tree service contractor is on, they either going to get one or two outreach links per quarter, because I spend roughly $200 per outreach link. So I only do one or two per quarter, depending on what their retainer value is. But what I'm saying is, what I found is that when we focus most of our budget on semantic links, or links with topical and geographic relevance, and then sprinkle in a few of those links that have good traffic, it kind of ignites everything. And so we do a mix of both, but we focus most of the budget on the more cost-effective links, because they're effective and it keeps me with more margin. You know what I mean?
Yeah, makes sense. So. I appreciate all of your insight. It's been quite a conversation. What would be one incredibly actionable thing for an SEO who just listened to this whole thing? What is the one action item that they should do after they listen to this today?
To establish what? Like,
just in general.
Like, what is just in general? Well, one thing I would do is I would consider learning about how to do competitive link analysis, because in my opinion, that is kind of the starting point for any link building campaign for me, for any type of client, whether it's a white label client or one of my own local SEO clients, which are tree service contractors. It always starts with competitive link. Now, we have to do full on page analysis and everything too.
Right.
But specifically, because we've been talking about links, I think competitive link analysis is critically important. And I have a free training, 100% free, that shows exactly how to do competitive link analysis the way that I just described and showed you on those spreadsheets and everything, including that workbook template that's a downloadable template so that you can just plug the data in and the pie charts will automatically create all of that. And I'd be happy to share that with you guys.
I will. I'll make sure anybody who's listening to this, I'm going to add that to the show notes. I'm also going to publish this episode specifically to YouTube. I've gotten out of the habit for that for some of my other episodes. But I'll publish this also on YouTube so you can see what Bradley was talking about on those screens. Just give the quick URLs where they can find you, and then we'll call it a night or a day,
sure,
or whatever it is.
Well, we've got a couple things. Just go to our YouTube channel. It's probably the best place. So youtube.com/@SemanticMastery. Semantic Mastery is, again, my coaching and information product, and that's all we teach is local SEO. We've been doing it for over 10 years. Like I said, we've got over 4,000 videos on our channel, which are all local SEO-related videos. A lot of Q&A. We do a weekly Q&A webinar called Hump Day Hangouts. So you guys are free to attend that and join and ask questions. It's a no-pitch, just training webinar for 1 hour per week. We've been doing that for over 10 years. No kidding. So go check out our YouTube channel, or you can go to semanticmastery.com and check, you know, go get on our email list or whatever. But that's pretty much the best way. Last thing is, if anybody was interested in any of our white label link building services, you can check out semanticlinks.io. semanticlinks.io. That is my white label link building service. And we provide competitive link analysis reports. You can purchase them, or we'll do them for you and all of that. But again, anybody that's running their own kind of SEO freelancing consultancy or agency business should really have somebody in-house that can do competitive link analysis for you and your clients so that you know exactly what types of links you need, the anchor text, the quantity, all of that stuff. It makes your link building, the job of link building, so much easier when you have that data in front of you.
Love it. Thanks so much for your time, Bradley.
You're welcome, man. My pleasure. And I hope to see you again sometime, Jeremy.